Hey, welcome on Challengers Podcast. This is a special episode because it's in English, back again. I had only one episode here, and I have a dear friend of mine that's also pretty cool in what he does. So welcome on Challengers, Seamus.
Hey, thanks very much, Nico. My name is Seamus O'Connor. It's a pleasure to be with my friend and podcaster, Nicolas de Paris. I'm a three-time Winter Olympian in the sport of snowboard halfpipe and slopestyle. Representing the country of Ireland.
Thank you for this quick introduction. We're going to dive deep into that and what it means to be an athlete for a country that is not used to winter sports in particular, and also to other aspects of your story, which I hope I can show here today, because it's going to be interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So maybe my first question is that, like, well, describe me your feeling, like the first time you understood you were going at the Olympics.
Yeah, for sure. It's it's a funny story. When I was, I don't know, I must have been 8 or 9 or something like that, and the Sochi Olympics were announced that they were going to be in Sochi in 2014. And my dad, you know, he's always one for like big grand ideas, these pipeline dreams. And he was like, man, like, it'd be really cool if you could compete in Sochi. You know, my mom's Russian, I have a family in Sochi. So if I compete in Sochi for Ireland, being an American born athlete, like really combine all three aspects of who you are, you know, nationality wise and culture wise. Mm-hmm. And being however old I was, you know, barely even 10, I don't know, 8, 10, you know. I was like, yeah, for sure. I didn't know the meaning of it yet. But once I started officially representing Ireland when I was 13, that's definitely when things all changed and got a lot more serious.
Wow. So you were 13 when you first represented Ireland?
Yeah.
Okay, so was it at the junior level?
So at that point, it was World Cup level. Before that, I was competing on a junior level representing the States.
Okay.
But at that point, like, country affiliations aren't as important.
Yeah.
As soon as you get onto the World Cup level, and you start getting FIS points, World Cup points, mm-hmm. then it really matters who you represent. And so the very first World Cup that I ever did was representing Ireland.
And so at 13 years old, it was you who made the decision to represent Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this was all a dream still up until that point. And we had reached out to the national governing body for snow sports in Ireland. And obviously we were in communications, and, you know, I think it's 12 and a half or 13 is the legal age you have to be to compete in the World Cup. And so we kind of timed it right with everything, that when I would start competing at 13, start accruing the points, that I would be representing them.
Wow. I think of that as I think of, like, young athletes and maybe, like, football players, when they come at the professional levels, they're still older than 13 years old. So I'm thinking right now, and maybe the people that are listening as well, like, what was I doing at 13 years old, you know? So you did that pretty young.
Yeah.
And so, but your family, growing up also in America and having your mom that is Russian, mm-hmm. like loved the idea of you competing for Ireland as well, right? Like, you were thinking about it and they were as well.
Yeah.
How was the dynamic there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I grew up in a very multicultural household.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather from my mom's side of the family lived with us throughout most of my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my Russian grandfather, you know, growing up with me, or I got to grow up with him, sorry. And I would always take trips back home to Ireland and England to visit my dad's side of the family. And then obviously we were all based in the States. So that dynamic was great. You know, I was learning Russian at home, speaking English with my parents, and, you know, keeping in close ties to everyone on my dad's side of the family. So, I mean, it all really made sense.
Nice. Yeah. And I imagine, like, maybe the Irish part was the least represented in your daily life, but maybe, like, the point where I want to ask you something is, like, then you're gonna represent Ireland for the next three Olympics, but maybe at home at first it was not the one that was, like, the major one, but maybe that's also why you had this will to represent it, you know, because it's the roots that maybe, or the culture that maybe you don't want to leave behind,
mm-hmm.
and where you still understand, like, the dynamics and your heritage,
yeah.
and then that you want to represent. Is there something like this?
No, absolutely. I mean, we grew up taking summer trips to Ireland, and we would do houseboating trips there. And I was always in love with the country and always loved going home and visiting my family. But I think at that young age, I think like the gravity and the weight of representing a country like isn't really settled yet in your brain, you know? And so when I was younger, I was definitely getting more acquainted with what this would mean. And obviously now, three Olympics, from that, I mean, it means the absolute world to me now. And I think it took that time to sort of develop, but honestly, it came pretty quick. Because like you said, like carrying on a part of you, carrying on like your cultural heritage is something that became the utmost like, you know, importance to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess, also for the people listening to us as well, we met through our masters. We're doing our masters together right now, and there's people from a multitude of different countries, different origins, different like cultural celebrations. Mm-hmm. And it would be interesting to see with them, but maybe the country that they represent or that they have at heart, mm-hmm. that is maybe has a smaller portion, is maybe the one that they have the most pride to then show, you know, to then celebrate. Like that's a good question to ask ourselves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I think there's parts of us that unless you have the opportunity to represent and to display, mm-hmm. can kind of become like a little bit of an unsung part of who you are. And so I think like being able to tap into all the different aspects of what makes you is a special, unique opportunity.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. You already had like big results when you were 13 years old competing at the World Cups. Describe me this episode of like you against other adults, you know? Like, because this seems crazy to me. We see the football players like we're, oh my god, he's like 17 and he's playing with professionals, like never heard of. And I imagine Smanche was just there like, hey guys, what's up?
it was a trip. It was an absolute trip. I mean, yeah, being that young and on the scene, I mean, I was competing against all my idols, people that like I would go and compete with people like Sean White, I don't know, JJ Thomas, Louis Vito, Danny Davis, all these kind of people, and I would have their posters in my room. So I'd be going and I'd be competing with them, and then I would come home and their poster would be above my bed, you know. And so like that was like a crazy transition from them being just like this out of reach, you know, out of touch personality, to all of a sudden somebody that I'm like standing next to in the start gate, and we're going down the same course and we're in the same competition. And so it was definitely like, I don't know, culture shock in a way.
Were you starstruck or were you like still focused and very professional in your
I definitely was like for sure starstruck, and I felt like obviously intimidated by that. It's like, what am I doing?
Of course.
Like, I don't know if I should be here. But honestly, like, I don't know, as a young kid, like you're able to adapt to things pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And also when you're young, maybe like you can be a little bit too confident for your own good. Okay. And I think like a part of me like fed into that. And eventually, instead of asking myself, okay, what am I doing here? I started to feel, okay, well, I belong here.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe one day I can beat Sean. Obviously not. Like, you have like a little voices in your head. You know?
Yeah. Those voices that motivate you, put you pushing, like fight the pressure and allow you to be focused. These are the voices that we hear in our heads as athletes, definitely.
Yeah.
And did you like try to emulate what they do? Like, I have this interesting parallel with Victor Wembanyama right now in the NBA, that in some of his interviews he was saying like, I want to express my own self, you know, on the court. I know I have these special highlights, I'm young, but I still have the potential, and I don't want to be the next Kevin Durant or like anyone, you know, he wants to be himself.
Yeah.
And that young, competing and being starstruck at the same time, I think it's the periods generally when we try to replicate the moves of these people, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you were growing your own identity. Yeah. So how did it grow up for you?
It's funny, because I feel like only now, maybe in the last 5 years, I've like really truly found who I am, at least like in relation to my sport.
Yes.
Because when I was young, I was surrounded by all these people, and like things were happening very quickly, and I had all of this support from the outside that can be a little bit overwhelming. You know, I had like an agent and a manager and coach, and I was on these teams that, you know, had all these like big name people on it. And so of course I wanted to be just like them. You know what I mean? It's like these guys are the coolest people in the world. Like I need to be like these people. You know what I mean? I obviously had my own like circle of friends that we all rode and competed together, and obviously that was like the more core group. But spending time with these people, I was like, okay, like I need to be this cool, and these are the words that I can say, and these, like, this is how I'd be cool, this is how I'd be like them, or like maybe even like how they do certain tricks, like, oh, like I should try to emulate that. And so when I was younger, yeah, but like there was, I was competitive for sure when I was younger, but there was obviously like a big gap between where I was and where the top guys are that I was looking at. Mm-hmm. So no matter how hard I tried, obviously I was never gonna actually be able to really physically represent that through like my performances.
Okay.
So I think like moving through that and finding actually like where I fell in that scope of competing and personality and what's your image, you know, what's your brand, like it took a while. But obviously as a young kid, I was just like, I wanted to be a part of it, you know, I wanted to be in the mix.
It takes maturity to then like build yourself as a man or woman, and you just grow in that field. And I guess that's also what we're doing in our professional careers, right? Like everyone is doing a bachelor, I don't know, in master, and in business, and then doing a master, and then like, oh, like what are my values, how do I express myself, which fields do I want to go in. And then it's not emulating what you see on the outside, but it's like doing what you would like to do and being good at it on the inside.
Totally
interesting. What would that be for you? Because I guess like, because you were so young doing the sport, you also had, I mean, I know it, but I'm doing like if I didn't know it, but you had the other things on your side, and you were learning them, and I'm wondering how did you integrate this part to a professional sports career that was pretty active for you still, and that it still is in some way at the moment. So my question is like, some athletes, they would have, okay, like, especially here in Europe, maybe the North America is different because, okay, you're a professional athlete, it's only that. But here in Europe, it's like, oh, we have school because it's mandatory, and then we have sports. So I'm wondering, how did school integrate into your like sports?
Yeah, I don't know. It was tough. It was really tough. My parents were really strict on me. Okay. And it was always like school first, snowboarding and everything else, third, fourth, fifth, you know, there it was like, school, number one, two, it was everything.
Okay.
And that was always something that was made very clear. It's like, if you don't keep up with your studies, then like, you know, it's cool that you like to snowboard and you have this dream, but like, we're going to put that on the back burner until you get your school figured out. So it was hard in the beginning because I kind of hated school because it was coming in between me and snowboarding and all the fun times that I would have and traveling and being with my friends. So I was like, school, whatever. But as I got older and more mature, I obviously realized the importance of it. I mean, and you see it too, like being an athlete, especially in extreme sports, like you're prone to injury, and some of those injuries can be really significant. And it's like, if you sustain a really significant injury and you don't have a safety net or a backup, you know, like what are you gonna do?
So did you consider your school as a like positive in the end for your mental health, because you're like, oh, there's the backup?
100%. I mean I kind of like to refer to this within the realm of snowboarding, but I think it's like it goes to any sort of sport really, but especially action sports, is like we're like, people are like disposable action figures. You know what I mean? Like, you can be hot 1 minute, but if you're injured the next minute, you're not. And so I was aware of that, and even going through that later in my career, I was super thankful that I was kept up in my school. And then when I figured out what it was I wanted to study, I studied psychology at university for my bachelor's, and I think that when I declared for psychology, I started going through my classes and I was competing at the same time. Like, the idea of school and sport really kind of came together, and then I'm thankful for that, because since then I've been, you know, being able to brick by brick lay, you know, a foundation. But up until then, it was a little like here and there, and, you know, just like, okay, I need to get through this. But
so there's two really important learnings you just shared with us. The first being, as a parent, like, see, yeah, school should be first. Like, you can make it to the Olympics without having only sport and saying to the professor, he's never gonna come. He has only, you know. But also As you the second part, as you mentioned as well, like building brick by brick, is key also to, but I guess it's the same in sports, right? You have like your small basics, mm-hmm. and then you build on it, you build the skills. Your sport is interesting because it's not a team sport, mm-hmm. it's not a contact sport, and there's maybe an art form in it,
I like to think so.
So I mean, I'm definitely sure there's a knife from it. So it's not a doubt. What I wanted to say is like, so there's like this like basics and tools or like tricks you're using, right? Mm-hmm. How do you view them in your head?
Like physically,
how do you imagine them? Like, I don't know, you go to a slope and you're like, oh, right now I'm gonna do like this thing, grab it. How do you think of it?
It was harder when I was younger, but like I remember someone telling me who was really good, and he was like, if you can see it in your mind and you can visualize it, then you can do it on stone. And that was like a crazy concept for me to think about, because I was like, no way. Like, I could picture anything, and I could, there's no way I have the physical skills to perform it. And he's like, no, if you can visualize it, then you can do it. And it takes a lot of practice, for sure. I mean, I used to have, like, a little snowboard doll, like a little figurine, and I would, like, play with it and, like, map out the tricks with the doll, and that would help visualize it so that I could see it in my mind. And then also doing things like, I don't know, air awareness trainings around trampolines or jumping in foam pits, like, sort of elements of, like, gymnastics that, you know, when you become more aware of your body or like, aware of the air and how you move through it, like, it's easier to physically picture it, like, in your head.
So you're able to understand where is your body at in some way, you know? Just like okay, turning like this, and you imagine all the members of your body.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, once you're in the air, I mean, it only comes down to like biomechanics, and so it's like that can be kind of a interesting concept for like a young person to grasp. But as soon as you just like spend some more time, like, oh, it's just like how I did on the trampoline, mm-hmm. and then you can visualize yourself. Okay, now I have a snowboard on. Now I'm in a half pipe. This is what it will look like. Wow. But it definitely, I was really bad at it in the beginning. Like, I could never visualize anything. And I thought it was going to, like, be the ruin of me. But I eventually got over it. Like,
no, they're telling me to do this, and it's never going to work.
Exactly,
But then it did.
Yeah.
You found it.
Like all things, right? Like, if you just gotta work at it, and it'll come.
Yes. Does it help you for other things in life?
Totally.
Yeah?
Totally. Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I used to get so, like, nervous all the time because I was always in, like, high stakes, high pressure situations. Maybe I could get hurt, maybe I could lose the competition, whatever. And often did, you know? Yeah. But like here now, my daily life is like, okay, class, presentations, meetings, whatever. But I still get, like, as everyone does, that sort of anxious feeling inside and the nervousness. How am I gonna present? What am I gonna do when I'm up there? Mm-hmm. And so I found myself now, even like being in this program, like before I go up, like, kind of walking myself through, okay, what is it going to feel like? What is it going to look like to stand in front of everybody? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do with my hands? How am I going to like hold myself up there? What am I going to say? How is it going to feel when I do it successfully and I'm walking back to my seat, mm-hmm. and kind of running through those same processes that I would as an athlete, you know, visualizing my run before I did it. Yeah. And so that's been cool. It's been helping for sure.
Yeah, I guess that's very, that relates to, do you remember the archery we did at the beginning of the semester?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was your first time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so did you, for example, in that example, did you use this imagination for the arrows and everything?
Yeah, I did, but I was way off target. It didn't work.
It's not our sport, you know, like super hard.
I was visualizing the bullseye, but I was somewhere over here. You know?
But you still did, because in your mind, and I have to say it's the same with me, I was like, ooh, if I can imagine it, I have some extra, because we only had like a couple of arrows per round, and so my idea was, okay, to have the advantage and to win over the others, and I can start imagining it in my head, and so I would have more reps than the others, and maybe I would win, you know? Mm-hmm. But so that's the same logic you have, but maybe not just for winning, as you say, maybe it's for the pressure and to be like, oh no, it's going to be fine. My body is able to move in that situation and to survive, in some way.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, I don't know who told me, and don't quote me on the number, but I think it's like they say it takes, I don't know, between 80 and 100 times of movement for something to like start becoming almost muscle memory, you know? And then like several hundred times, 1,000 times, okay, then it's muscle memory and you can do that without thinking about it. So with snowboarding, it's like you might only get 10 opportunities to try a certain trick on any given day. Mm. But if you can go home and you can visualize it 100 times, then you're that much closer to like building that muscle memory. And I think that can be applied anywhere.
Yeah, totally. Especially maybe also when you're injured, maybe you can use it as well. Like there's 100%. Unlimited possibilities there.
Yeah.
And do you imagine it at larger scale as well? Because I guess like after your first Olympics, then you'll tell me also how it went and how they compare maybe the three. But did you have this like, okay, like I'm going to go through the Olympics and like, okay, I'm going to do this and this, party there, and then, you know, come back home. Like, how is it? How is it? Do you picture like a longer event in your mind, not just a trick?
Well, the first Olympics was like, I was a deer in the headlights, you know, just like totally spooked by the whole thing.
How old were you?
I was 16.
16.
Yeah. So, and like, I was a fresh 16. I think I had turned 16 in the October, and it was February. So, just a wee lad. But, yeah, that one was crazy for sure, because I had no idea what to expect. I just knew that it was going to be overwhelming, and it was way more overwhelming than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But then, like, the Olympics after that, I was definitely able to like have an idea of all the process I was going to go through, what things were going to look like, and yeah, running through that became a lot easier. But it was kind of wild that first time around.
Why was it overwhelming?
I mean, going back to like the representing your country, and that was, I mean, obviously I'd been competing on the World Cup circuit, I had to qualify, whatever, and I was representing Ireland through that whole process, but in the lead up to the games, at the games, even after, I mean, people are asking to interview you, you're going through all these like seminars on media or what to expect, and it's like all of a sudden this gets like real.
Really?
And you're not doing it for yourself anymore. It's like, I'm not going out to snowboard because I want to be better. It's like, oh no, I'm going to represent an entire nation, an entire country, and all the people that are within that country. And so I have to make sure that I'm performing the best, I'm presenting the best that I can. But also like the honor that you feel to do that. And so it was just like, that's a lot. But at the same time, I was like so, I don't know, excited about it that, you know, it all balanced.
Okay.
But and obviously I wasn't in the spotlight. But being at the Olympics, you kind of feel that you are, even when you're not, you know? Like I wasn't a top athlete by any means. But like just having that feeling can be a lot.
Yeah, because you dreamt it for a long time, and you talk about it, and people come to you and do boring interviews with you. No, it's, I guess, of course I'm kidding with boring interviews, but I guess it's a whole other thing to ask an athlete about him, and or then ask an athlete about, how are you representing Ireland, you know, And I guess especially when you're young and maybe you were not used to this, maybe, so go ask a 16-year-old these questions and he's going to be like, I have math class Sunday on Monday. So, impressive. So you learned, and the second Olympics you were way more confident in that
for
matter.
Sure. Okay. Definitely. Well, I mean, I could go in with the intention of performing, but also like, I'm going to have the best time ever. Like, I was so excited. I mean, the Olympics are great, but I was just so excited to be there. I mean, you mentioned snowboarding not being a team sport. And so the games were really the only time that I've got to, like, feel what it means to be, like, in a team. And I didn't realize how important or, like, how meaningful that could be.
Okay.
You know, like, being from an individual sport, you don't get that experience.
Yeah. So your team has, your first team has been Ireland then?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, good first team to start with.
100%. It was great. I wouldn't change a thing.
Nice.
No, and you know, we had a small team. I think we were five in the first games.
Perfect.
So it's like you get to know everyone really well.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. It was the second Olympics. So I have to describe the scene I saw.
Yeah.
I think it was Catherine that mentioned us, that showed us the video where there's Seamus with a gigantic flag in his hand. Like at the ceremony and just like moving it with a lot of passion, excitement.
Yeah.
You had the energy right there. You're how do you say in English? Like pumped?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
I'm more than pumped.
Yeah. So was that the second Olympics?
Yeah, that was the second Olympics.
Oh my God.
In Pyeongchang in 2018. And like, I think, okay, going to the Olympics is a lot of athletes like dream and goal, but then like to be like a flag bearer at the Olympics in the opening ceremony is like, bah, you know, like insane. And it was like, yeah, I mean, still thinking back on that, like I get goosebumps. Like it was for sure the peak of my like career or sporting achievements. I mean, like, I don't know. It's never going to get better than that.
No.
You know, like, and I remember I was jumping around and we're supposed to, like, you know, you're supposed to walk straight, right? But I was so excited. I wanted to see my team because I was there with my team, right? So I turned around and I was sort of like walking towards them in the wrong direction. And they were like, they were freaking out. They're like, it's awesome. They're like, yo, you got to go that way. And I turned around. But I was like, I couldn't even fathom. I was just like, I wanted to see everybody. I'm like, jumping for joy.
Wow.
And yeah, my dad got to walk out actually like in the parade. Nice. With the team. And so like I feel like in that moment it was not only like full circle for like my sporting career, but also like relationship with my dad.
Yeah, you know?
So yeah, it was wow. Unreal. Yeah.
Wow, that's a good moment.
Yeah. Just
want to take it in.
Yeah, yeah,
good, good emotion.
Sure. Yeah.
So you say even now it brings you a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes, you know, you want to be motivated or you want to be like, reassured that you can do a like difficult challenge. So maybe this is a moment you think about and you're like imagining the scene and that moment, and you like suddenly have energy in your body.
Yeah.
Do you use that in that way sometimes?
It's funny, last week we had a professor that was talking about like creating experiences.
Yes.
And like transformative experiences. And he asked the class, okay, think about something, you know, think about an experience that you've had. First thing that came to mind was that.
Yeah.
You know, and I just kind of sat there in it for a while and I wrote it down because it's crazy, like I hadn't actually thought about it in so long. And then I was sitting there thinking about it and all of a sudden I was just like larger than life, you know?
Yeah.
Like I right back there in the moment. So yeah, no, I'm definitely gonna try harder to remember that, because it's like I was almost ashamed that I could like not think about that more consistently. Like, man, that was such a cool moment.
Yeah.
You know, and the energy was so like palpable and so real. Like,
yeah.
So
and so authentic as well, because you had the guideline of going in certain way, but you were like, no, like my team is here, my dad is here,
yeah,
no, I want to celebrate. So it's also an authentic moment, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was yeah. One of the best moments of my life, like hands down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, in the first part of our conversation, there was this emotional moment where you were the flag bearer, and I don't know if this was a goal you had or if it just happened to be one of your opportunities. But I wanted to dive a little bit into like goal setting, like in the past and right now. Like, do you have the same goals? There's 2026 Olympics coming up. Like, how are you envisioning the future?
Yeah, my goals have definitely they've changed a lot throughout my career. I mean, all over the place. You know, I think when I was a kid, like I don't know, I said to some like my dad or something, I want to be like the best snowboarder in the world. It's like, okay. Like, most unrealistic goal I could possibly set for myself.
Yeah.
So I was destined for failure after that. It's like, okay, never going to reach that. But, no, my goals have definitely changed, like, as I've grown through snowboarding. Before, it was, like, way more focused on my own, like, personal performance and, yeah, like, achieving certain results, going to the Olympics, yada, yada, yada. Now, I mean, it's definitely more so on how can I spread the word of Irish snow sports, how can I best represent, how can I like maybe like pass something on to future generations, younger athletes that are looking to get involved. And also like for me personally, just like, I don't know how to say it, like fulfillment and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, looking towards 2026, like a lot of my goals still are resonating around this, like in a way, how can I use this really unique opportunity, if I'm able to qualify, to like promote, I don't know, my sport, my country, like how to come up, you know, as a younger athlete that maybe doesn't have access to, you know, the larger resources that other teams or athletes would have access to.
So if I can try to resume, like it went from the a goal that was maybe more like an achievement from doing the Olympics and being the best in the world to finding the meaning and the values and also a bit the legacy, like in your classes right now, we're looking at like the Olympic legacy, but you also want to have a legacy of your own, maybe like, oh, like I'm an Irish snowboarder, like my experience has been tremendous and helped me in life, like I want other people to be able to experience it. So that's the vision you have, isn't
it? Yeah, totally. That's interesting. I mean, I'm, as of right now, the first and only Irish freestyle snowboarder. And I certainly don't want to be the last.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's been really cool to see, like, Irish snow sports has, even just with the time that I've been working with them, have come a long way. Like, have really blown up, and like the interest has skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. And I think we're like on a really good upward trajectory.
Nice.
We just got to keep hammering at it and like keep letting people know that there's other options. Like, you know, wherever it is that you come from, like a lot of times there's not just one option compared like to maybe who you can represent. But yeah, I think leaving a legacy is at this point the most important thing for me. I mean, who knows what kind of legacy I can bring, but anything that I can bring that was positive to somebody else or to the sport in any way, shape, or form.
That shows your maturity also from when we were kids. Like when we were kids, we have these goals, like I want to be the best in the world.
Yeah.
And obviously like it was set for failure, as you said, but on the other hand, like it allowed you to dream. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you didn't allow yourself to dream, maybe you would have closed some doors. So right now, when you have different potential, you're like, okay, like, I'm more aware of like my potential and my power, and I'm gonna act in a certain way to use it to maximize the positive outcome, which is cool. And which is also pretty much who you are. I mean, knowing you also, like there's this empowerment that you give also, you know, like I think that's stuff that I think I mean, it is like the impact you want to have is sort of like this push. So it's interesting. What are your plans? What are your ideas on that? Like we mentioned before the podcast, you wanted to explain to athletes that were from big countries that they could also represent the smaller countries they were originally from. That's maybe the first idea I want to dive into. Like, what is maybe the message you want to give to these athletes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, obviously it depends heavily on sort of your own family lineage, but I think like the idea of representing a country can go so much further than just where you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And at the Olympics, as I'm sure you know, there's only 4 athletes per gender, per discipline of each sport that can compete.
Yeah.
So a lot of the bigger teams, they have, you know, maybe 20 incredible athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Only 4 will get to go. And sure, that creates like this, it breeds like the best sense of competition. And sure, only the best of the best of the best will get to go and compete.
Yes.
But there's so many other ambassadors of that sport that could be incredible ambassadors for maybe a slightly different cause or meaning. Or, you know, they can be under the same meaning, but able to deliver that message to a wider range of people. So, I mean, it would be... That's one goal that I would say. I mean, but really specifically from personally trying to raise the level and awareness of Irish snow sports.
Mm-hmm.
But then obviously like have separate goals in terms of like athlete empowerment and mental health within the athlete space. I mean, both my parents are involved with mental health, and I studied psychology, and hopefully, you know, after we're done here, I can hopefully continue that trend. And you know, you often hear a lot of times that organizations put athletes first. It's athlete-centered, athlete-focused, athlete-centric.
Mm-hmm.
But when it really boils down to it, I mean, being on the athlete side of it, a lot of the times that isn't the case.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it would be cool to see some like really concrete changes where like when someone says their organization or their mission is athlete-focused, from soup to nuts, from top to bottom, it really is.
It has to be.
Yeah, you know, because I mean, words are one thing, but actions are a completely different thing. So,
That's perfect. Like that's a way for you to like bring things to reality. You know, like you want the concrete results to happen.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll see. We'll see how lucky I get.
Like what's the place of luck in that? Because you have the experience at the Olympics, you have the experience as an athlete.
Yeah.
you have the psychology part, you're getting the management part here, so you're having the tools, right? You're you're setting yourself up for success. I feel
trying.
Yeah, that's good.
Try my best. We'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, for sure. Imagine you have in front of you a young snowboarder, I don't know, like 13 years old or 9 years old, and he's already representing, let's use Ireland as an example again, and he's talking to you, he's like, I saw you waving passionately that flag. I want to do the same. What are your best advices to him?
For sure, go for it. First and foremost, like, yeah, you want to do the same? Awesome. Let's do that. Like, make sure you don't give up that goal. Second, though, is, I mean, it's a long road, and there's gonna be a lot of trials and tribulations in that road, and it's gonna be inherently difficult, and there's gonna be a lot of things to juggle. But the road, I mean, it's so cliche, right? It's not the destination, it's the journey. Yes. But like, even in my own experience, like, I was so focused on, I gotta qualify for the Olympics, I have to get this event, this many points, I have to get this sponsorship, blah, 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 blah. That like, in the moment, I wasn't like really paying attention to just how special it was that like I even got to be where I was. And as I got older, I started to be able to like, you know, remove myself from the situation a little bit, like, man, I'm on the top of a mountain right now, like in Europe, sliding down snow on like a wood, like, you know, this is ridiculous. Like, all like my friends are in school right now.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't be here. You know, this is so special. And so it got easier to recognize that as I got older. But when I was younger, like, you're flooded with all these other influences and things that are going to take your time and your mental space. So go for it. Put your heart and soul into it. But by no means is reaching that point like really like the what matters.
What defines
your celebration? Like if you reach it or not, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
It's how are you enjoying the time from here and out? What are you learning? Who are you meeting? What experiences are you getting? And I think like when I look back on my career, that was the most important. Like, that's everything that I take away is all from the memories I've made, you know, along the way, with new friends that I've made, existing friends, just experiencing new cultures, you know, a new place, new food, everything, all of it. It was really what resonates most with me.
Nice. So if I have to recap what you just said, is about first daring to dream.
Yeah.
And then acknowledging and enjoying every moment as like special.
Yeah.
And that being more important than the goal or the dream that you set yourself up to, and to try to not link your identity too much to that goal in preparation of the failure, but still caring enough to work and have the discipline to work for it.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna have to work hard.
Yeah,
for sure, it's gonna be like the hardest thing you've ever done. But finding some like a way within that hard work to like recognize that that's special. You know, you're not just doing anything else. And having discipline, but being able to have the ability to enjoy every step, it's gonna get hard, and if you don't enjoy it, then it won't work.
Yeah, then you're gonna have a crash, everything, and you're gonna get lost because you don't remember why you did it in the first place.
Yeah,
I see what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, I almost quit snowboarding after I like had a really serious knee injury. So I was like, I don't know why I'm doing this anymore. I don't, you know. But the love of the sport, like my own passion, and like my passion reignited for snowboarding through that injury. Mm-hmm. And then since then, I was like, I've been having the most fun. Even
That's
though like I'm almost performing at not worst levels, but like my trajectory for progression really kind of hit a really heavy speed bump and plateau.
Yes. Yes, yes.
But I'm having way more fun now than I ever was before.
After your injury, the fun mattered more?
Yeah, I mean, like I was able to, I don't know, re-capsulate what it meant to me. And, you know, it wasn't like, wasn't chasing the success or the results anymore.
Yes.
I was like just chasing what it meant to like, to snowboard, which was having fun. And like, that feeling alive on my board, you know, and like getting the feeling of flying through it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's like what pulled me back into it. And it's like, in a way, I'm like, I'm almost thankful for that injury, because without it, like, you know, a lot of the going through the motions became like robotic, you know, and it's like, okay, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. But then like, I was like losing some of that, I don't know, magic to it that makes things desirable and fun.
So did the injury give you the chance to prioritize, or did the injury give you the time to think about why you were doing what you were doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which one of the two?
It was definitely the time in mm-hmm. the beginning, because I mean, I totally destroyed my knee. So like I was away from snowboarding for almost a year.
Wow.
I wasn't walking for, I don't know, over 2 months. And so a lot of time sitting on the bed, like really evaluating what's going on here. What am I gonna do?
Yeah.
But then coming back to a place, and I remember telling my dad, because I was doing rehab in California, and I was based in Utah before that, and I was like, I want to go do my rehab in Utah. And he was like, why? Like, you can't snowboard. And I was like, yeah, but I just need to be in that atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to be in the mountains. That's where I feel happy.
Yeah.
And as soon as I can, like, against, I obviously wouldn't tell the doctor, because I wasn't allowed to, but I was going up and, like, taking turns in the snowboard and definitely, like, not being a really good patient. But feeling how, like, all I wanted to do was snowboard, and then, okay, then that allowed me to prioritize how was I gonna like come back mm-hmm. to the level that I wanted to be at. Okay. So it was time first, getting that feeling back, and then using that as like motivation to like, okay, you know, I'm gonna like recover as mm-hmm. best I can. I'm gonna put in all the effort I can into working out, into rehabbing, but it wasn't like a slog. I was like, oh man, I gotta go to rehab. It's like, can we do more rehab sessions? Like, how can we speed this up, you know? Like,
that's so interesting. Yeah, because sometimes we get so caught up in your lives, you know, that yeah. we just turn on the automatic mode that yeah. we don't think that much anymore, and
yeah.
and we don't give each other the time to remember why we're doing it or
yeah.
to understand where we take the fun from
yeah.
the situation.
Yeah.
And you were able to like, oh, okay, I get the fun in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're like,
yeah.
I get the fun by not listening to the doctor and taking those curves, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's very interesting. And I guess this applies to not only sports, but you know, in work as well. Like
yeah.
being caught up in something can be very like, yeah, looking in only one direction
yeah.
and not especially having the view.
Yeah.
So that would also be a great advice for the young snowboarder
yeah.
that you
would. Yeah. I mean, not taking things for granted, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, it can be all taken away in a second. And obviously I was like, in the grand scheme of things, knee injury, okay, whatever. I'll come back to snowboarding in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously people on a daily basis deal with problems, you know, uncomparably towards that, uncomparably like larger than that.
Yeah.
But at least like, going through that really, okay, can't take this for granted. And that's what, yeah, really pulled me back. It's like,
mm-hmm.
it's special, it's unique, I'm having fun, like, man, I gotta do this, I gotta keep doing this, at least while I can. At least before the arthritis really sets in, you know what I mean? And then, like, we'll figure it out then.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nice. Good. I think you're showing me well what you want in life and what you wanting to express.
Yeah, but I mean, same with you, though. I mean, like, with your hockey, like, you're an athlete, still are, right?
Yeah.
But you've transitioned.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But that love of the sport's still there, clearly.
Yeah.
Otherwise you wouldn't do it.
And it's true that refereeing came after an injury. So the injury also sparked a different, how do you say, direction in what I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And it's fun how you mentioned the mountains and the snow as like your place of happiness.
Mm.
As hockey is less dreamy of a destination, you know? I mean, the ice is always beautiful,
yeah.
but then, like, the rinks and the buses, like, it's
yeah.
not that dreamy in,
sure.
in the rest.
Sure.
So the happiness I had was, like, working in a team, you know, with a common goal. And that's basically what I found again in refereeing.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm also putting all in to go in that direction.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how this place of happiness in our brains is sometimes physical.
Yeah.
But also sometimes just mental, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it all the time. Like, you're juggling class and everything else, and you're doing this, hockey, everything. But like, you know, the motivation is always there. I don't know how you do it. I mean, you're up late all the time
yeah.
and always traveling and stuff. there obviously has to be like a deep, you know, desire for that.
Do you, with snowboard, do you have to go late? Or like, do you usually snow? Like, I'm not talking about the parties. I have crazy assumptions on the snowboarders. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Yeah,
that's
but
okay.
On TV, yeah. The lifestyle seems so cool that I cannot. But usually like you sleep at the place where you were snowboarding, right? So normally sleep is not the problem at your competitions, and you don't have late night sessions, or maybe you do?
No, I mean, no, not really. I mean, it depends on where the session. If you're talking about the bar or the mountain, I mean, there's
Sure.
Don't joke. No, I mean, it's, you know, you're usually training a few hours a day in the pipe or whatever it is your discipline is. And yeah, you need to like do physical activity and like stay fit. But I mean, like, yeah, for the most part, it's not too tough to juggle. Although doing my first event over a year, 2 weeks ago,
yeah,
I was feeling my age for sure, and definitely feeling like maybe some like more preparation would have gone a long way.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're just freestyle. It's all good.
Maybe the people that are listening right now were not aware of your competition. I mean, I didn't remember what you posted on Instagram, etc. Because I didn't go, but can you resume this event a little bit? Because it's like a bit of a comeback in some way, you know? what you're describing to me is like, I was not physically prepared, but you were you able to enjoy the moment? Were you able to do what you wanted? Like?
Sure. Yeah, no, so 2 weeks ago I went to LOX to do the LOX Open. It's like my favorite event on Earth, my favorite place on Earth. When I think of mountains, when I think of like, when you're saying your happy place, Lox.
Wow.
That's the place. Yeah, if heaven was a place on Earth, that would be it, you know? And so went to do that event, and it's a World Cup event, going there for, I don't know, over 10 years. And I hadn't done a contest for 13 months, so last December. Sure. I mean, it was tough because like that was my first time in a pipe since 2022 December, and before that, my last time in the pipe was at the Olympics the previous February.
Yes.
So from the Olympics until I competed just the other week, I think I've had maybe 7 days in the pipe of like actual training time. Wow, so super long time. So it was safe to say it was a little bit rusty. I had an incredible time. I had an absolute, like, I had a ball. But being back in that environment and, like, trying to switch into it so quick was tough. It was definitely tough. Like, all those, like, nerves came back and feeling the anxiety of, like, competing. And, oh, my gosh, I have to try this trick. And, like, I'm not riding well. And I had a fall in practice. I broke my board. And, like, now I'm like, okay, what am I going to do about that? Like, yeah, it was a whirlwind. But, like, as soon as I finished it, I was like, I, like, kind of was, like, frustrated. Because I was like, that feeling came back. Because, I did a run. And, like, I hadn't done those tricks in practice. And then, like, last competition run, I just, like, put it together. And sure, it was an average run, you know? But just to, like, not have any practice and, like, be able to, like, still do those tricks, I landed it. And I was like, man, like, if I, like, had some more practice. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, just, like, it just, like, pulling me back in every single time. It's, like, such a hard thing to get away from.
I totally get what you mean.
Yeah.
But so right now, if you're facing your heart, you want to go back.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, definitely.
So we have to train way more at the gym.
Yeah, 100%. You gotta not let me slack off. No options, because, the body was hurting after that contest. Yeah.
Seamus, I'm going to make sure that you're not going to miss any more gym with me.
Okay, that's perfect. That's it's on record now, so we have to do it.
Yeah. But what a fantastic way to end the episode.
Awesome. We're
being sure that... So for the people that follow him, I met your team, which they're super cool. Like,
yeah.
So they're counting on you to go to LAX a lot more times because it seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So we're definitely going to work for those... not like goals in terms of like achievements, but also in terms of like meaning, expressing cool things to people.
100%.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, hey, thank you.